Hello, this is Ruslan Malinovsky.
Hello, this is Roman Yaremchuk.
Hello, I'm Sergey Rebro.
And you're listening to Ukraine Plus Football.
The winter break is well and truly over. The Ukrainian transfer window has finally closed. Football has returned. Pitches that are being played on look characteristically beautiful, like carpets. A select few, not so much. Debuts have been had, players are bedding in. An international break is almost upon us. As always, we'll take a look at all the recent happenings in the latest episode of Ukraine Plus Football.
Ні, ні, Верес забиває п'ятий. Поки що зараховуємо 5-1. Сам не розумію, як це вдалося зробити Євгеній Шевченко. Важко, друзі, підбирати слова, коли люди забивають 5 м'ячів у ворота четвертої команди УПЛ. А, мабуть, це...
The UPL is back. We are 4 match days in. There is Rivne. The revelation so far. It's great to see the boys back, bringing positive news to the great city of Rivne. Michael, our resident Watch UPL subscriber. I hope you've been enjoying all of their matches through the wonderful network. What's been going on with them and why are they so good since the turn of the year?
I think they've been playing fantastic football. It's just... I think the foundations have been laid for a while for them to build into what they're growing into right now. And we're seeing the fruits of that really a lot coming through. They've made smart signings, even signing Karatin. Obviously, we'll come to his episode against Kolos. But he's hit the ground running and it's just that good little bit of experience. And like I know, saying this off the pod, but they seem to have got a real fortress. They're so hard to beat at home at the minute. And the one team who have managed to do that with little fans in the stadium. So huge praise for Verez Rivne. And obviously, this only happened today, but they obviously came off the back of absolutely slamming Polisia 5-1. Now, this might be like the, not the best analysis, but Verez Rivne obviously playing very well and Polisia are playing bad. And that's pretty much how that game went. But yeah, the cruise to it, the bounce back from the game against Lviv-Borê proved to be just a little mishap. But yeah, played really well. But I don't know what's going on at Polisia. They've made sort of decent signings. I mean, Batista's played really well since he's come in. He's been bagging a few goals. But is it down to the manager? I personally think it is. I think if it was me, Asher would go now, personally. He seems to have been found out. He's had a big budget, he's underachieved, and I just don't think there's any point in waiting till the end of the season, really. That's what I think, and I think there's still a chance to maybe salvage something in the cup.
Well, just to be clear, we're not talking about hip-hop stars from the 2000s. There's no Ushers in UPL.
The question is Imad Ashour, some people are already saying it on Twitter or elsewhere, but has he been hyped up a bit too much when he first arrived, being a young, relatively inexperienced coach and being given such a big role, you know, in relativity to what he was doing previously? And has it all sort of flung back in his face, realistically? Because Butkevich has backed him heavily in the transfer window. They've signed loads of players. I mean, the window that they've had so far and, you know, closed out with Batista, as Mike mentioned, has actually probably been the best one of the lot. Consistently scoring. For me, a Ruud van Nistelrooy type striker in and around that 6-yard box, and he'll put anything away in any kind of fashion as well. And they've played against 4 relatively poor teams at the start of this year. They've won 2, drawn 1, and lost probably the most surprising by a 5-1 scoreline to Veres. And the other 3 teams, Inhulets, they narrowly beat 1-0. Oberlin 0-0 draw, where Oberlin looked the better team throughout that. They looked more sort of more intense, more up for the ball. You know, they created more chances, and then they beat Trondheim Moritz, who are probably the worst team in the division right now. And you think about it, and some people are saying it's because they really struggle against a low block, similar to what we're going to probably be talking about against Shakhtar later on. And it seems that they play a lot better when they're playing against teams that give them a bit more space or attack at them. And then they can play on the counter attack with those two wingers that they have. Relatively one dimensional, but it's effective. Lots of pace. They've got a good goal scoring striker. They've got a relatively good midfield. They've brought in a couple of Israelis this window who have looked all right. Andrievsky's started off quite well. So I just don't really understand why it's not clicking. They have got a few, let's say, harder teams to face coming up. So I think maybe that will be more of a litmus test. We're going into this international break now, and there has been lots of talk that, you know, Imad Ashour has got the backing of the owner. He's not going to be sacked anytime soon. But I mean, if he was to get sacked at any point before the end of the season, you'd probably think right now is the best point. But who would you bring in? And what kind of thinking is that, you know, going to bring? Even more so, you know, Shevchuk, Vyacheslav Shevchuk is the new sporting director there. Hit and miss football management hierarchy career so far. Not sure what he's going to bring in going forward. They've still got their representation in the national team, which we'll touch on later. They just need a bit more consistency. Nazarenko has really not looked the same as he did in the first half of the season. Are we seeing one of those splits where certain teams play well in the first half and less in the second half? There is one team that is not, or has not fallen short of that yet, but we will touch on that right at the end of our UPL roundup.
I'm going to try now to drop in as many Usher references as I can. I do have some confessions for you. When Andrew was talking about Usher, he reminds me about where Usher comes from and where he's a graduate of. Now, I will allow you to pass on that because I don't want to mention any companies in particular. Perhaps there's a certain company that has got an influence in clubs and they're putting people in clubs who don't have the footballing experience. They may come with a certain scouting pedigree that might be able to pass on something to the club that they're part of. But when it comes to football itself, they're missing their footballing career, their real footballing expertise that they need to succeed at the top level. And the people who are pushed to the front through this company, what their actual skill set is, and are we seeing in Polisia a manager who has been put way above his station and really doesn't have the skills needed to manage a club at the top level of any domestic league? Not just the UPL. That's my thoughts on it.
Well, talking about pedigree, right, and experts from the world of football, I have just two examples. One of them is a certain translator of Bobby Robson back in Barcelona. I wonder whom has he scouted, and I wonder what has he learned from that experience. But you know what? It's all about respect in the end. Respect, respect, respect. And the second example is one of the graduates from this course you mentioned in Ukraine, and he told a story in the recent interview where the way he found Rostislav Taranucha, who is the current forward for Oberlin. You would say, some would say the only forward, but well, until recently, right? And this guy found him on in Park Natalka in Oberlin, the place where I used to play. It's right by the river. The guys just come there and play football, and he was just, you know, destroying everybody. And people asked, "Who is that?" And he said, "That's Taranucha from Dinamo." Back then, he was from Dinamo school, right? And he saw the difference, and we know where the guy is now. My point is, it's a hit and miss. A good highlight of Usher's career when he beat Shakhtar. It still is. You remember these moments, and I don't I'm not talking about the police under Shishenko that just, some people say that Shakhtar gave away that match. But then Usher came in, and in the beginning of the season, he beat Shakhtar. And for clubs like Obolon, I know that police counts themselves as Alexandria tier club rather than Obolon tier club. But for most clubs in EPL, let's be honest, this is the essence of existence, matches like that. So for me, if you ask me if Usher is a fraud, no, because he brought the fans this star on the LA, as they say, but a decent milestone. And if some people are not happy with it, well, maybe they should just watch more Colas games.
Colas caused a lot of discussion, haven't they, over the last few weeks? I think Michael, they caught your eye first of all, in the was it in against Veres when they played them in one of the first games back.
Yeah, the thought they played all right at the start, but they definitely dropped off very quick in the Ukrainian Premier League. There were one team that I always felt the league position used to almost mask their form. So they were never scoring, they were rarely winning, rarely scored above one goal, yet they would seem to always sit in like a comfortable mid-table position. And I was thinking all it's going to take is a few games where the bottom teams start winning games and they're going to start free falling. And that happened, and it was inevitable that the manager was going to be sacked. Plozdiev was sacked eventually, and it was inevitable. Petrikov, obviously rumoured to come in, he was sat watching the match, which was very interesting. And that's Petrikov actually just going off quickly. I think he'd be a good fit for Palicia to steady the ship. And you all think I'm mental, but I think he'll be great. But eventually, Kostashin was put in as a caretaker role. And that is something that I was really pleased with, because obviously he's Mr. Kolos. All you need at this stage of the season for a team like that is just someone to come in and just lift and boost your confidence. It's not about a rebuild, it's not about panic decisions, it's about someone just to come in and steady the ship and get a few results to tie you off to the end of the season. Yeah. And I'm just happy they didn't panic with a 2-year contract and all this riffraff. Just give him a caretaker role, regroup in the summer and see who is the best available there. And if he gets results, then so be it. Give him the role. But I'm excited to see how they get on. Maybe make Europe again. See if he can guide them into Europe. That's
Right,
what
yeah, got into it from third bottom
I
too.
You lot don't
Absolutely.
believe. I just believe. I watch it. I see the beating heart of these teams week in, week out.
Oh my God. Aside from what Mike just said there, I think it is quite, well, you could say it's maybe even uncharacteristic of Andriy Zasuha to go so all in on sacking Pozdeev just straight after a loss against Alexandria. It probably was needed, but maybe he could have done it in the winter or something like that, especially with the relatively all right signings they brought in. The Albanian Rapai looks pretty good. They've got some good squad depth in there, and they probably shouldn't be as low as they are. It's just that the football they play is just so poor. It's obviously textbook ultra defensive and score very little. However, the defense has been pretty bad, and they've ended up conceding a lot more and not scoring. It's from a more level-headed position that they've brought in Kostishin. So I agree with Mike there. Steady the ship and see who they can bring in the summer. But the fact that Ivashchenko, Valery Ivashchenko, the ex-Obolon manager who kept Obolon up last season and was let go, I think that's kind of slightly concerning that he was in the running or at least one of the heavy favourites, because it's almost identical style of play to Pozdeev, to Vishniak before him. And I'm not sure what would have happened if they did announce him, because it would have just been more of the same, in my opinion. Do you not agree, Ray?
I just want to mention that the reputational cause of this signing, because up to this day, well, I'm gonna say this out loud. Ruslan Kostishin, right? Ruslan Kostishin, this person, he is the number one candidate to be cancelled in Ukrainian football media. I'm not saying he's not a good coach or he was a bad player. Unfortunately, if we consider these aspects, he was okay. But he once used a swearing word in a press conference as a head coach of Kolos, talking about Andriy Senki, a friend of the pod, which I haven't never used in my life. I still can't believe I heard it. And I mean, I have lived in Ukraine for 27 years, and I never, never, ever heard that word before. And as a head coach in a public press conference, talking about a certain journalist who was actually right to be investigating what happened in the train, remember, with the college players at the time who Kostyshyn protected,
They
which
were all getting
all of
drunk
this,
under his watch.
yes, for this only. And he was actually out of the picture for a long time. They invited him to be an expert on UPL TV. I wasn't happy about it. But now he's officially back. And well, it's not a Mel Gibson kind of story, you know what I mean? This is a guy who was out of line, who didn't suffer any, consequences for this. Everybody ignored it. Everybody, some of the people supported him. But the way you express yourself to an audience who tried to like Ukrainian football, and I mean, I don't mention the children and, teenagers, whatever. As a head coach, as a people who is a role model, who people look up to, it does not work that way. So there have to be consequences, and there have to be an institute of reputation, but that's another story. Long story short, this is one more example of a Kolos being non-fan club, non-community center club, non-club in essence, right? It's a football team. And there is a brand stolen. There is a certain, I think, Andrew, you mentioned they sacked the SMM, right?
Well,
So I don't, yeah.
there's no proof of that, but when the news broke that Kostyshyn was the new manager, it was only posted on the website and nothing was posted on Instagram or Telegram or anywhere else. So, alongside sacking Pozdeyev, there were rumors that he sacked all the hierarchy in the team, all the admin staff as well, Andriy Zasuha, the club president. Apparently, he's tracked back on some of that and kept some of the higher echelons of the club, but evidently, it looks like there's a whole purge has taken place. A new team will have to be built over the next few weeks and months. But like Ray said, Kolos isn't really, well, they are a family club in the sense that they are the Zasuha family.
This is the model that most Ukrainian clubs aspire to.
I would actually disagree, and that brings us on to LNZ, who themselves are run by, let's say, agricultural business, very successful ones, seeds and all that kind of thing. But they really are trying to expand football and its popularity in Cherkasy. Like, you even look at everything they're doing at the stadium there, which was very derelict and run down when we were there 3 years ago. It looks brilliant. Like, the pitch is almost immaculate. They've got the LNZ branding everywhere on all the stadiums. They've got a fan shop that seems to be working very well. They've got one of the best social media teams in the country, probably in terms of announcing players and all that kind of thing. Kikorchuk at the wheel. We had high hopes, I think, when we on our last pod that they were going to start pretty well. They've done, how can you put it, okay. They played not too bad against Karpaty, but lost 1-0. But they were, I think Karpaty went a man down and they lost. They beat Ruch 1-0 very narrowly. And LNZ are playing Kolos this weekend. So it's like it all matches up perfectly to see Kostyshyn's first game back against this newly energised Kikorchuk side, who ex-goalkeeper Oleksiy Shevchenko was doing an interview this week calling him a dictator, calling him Vladimir Putin style. A dictator in the way that he runs the shop at his clubs. I think they crossed paths at Chornomorets. That was his opinion. However, Kikorchuk, his team have brought in two, I would say, star, or they should be star signings this in over this past week. Beni Makuana, someone I love in particular, and was a big fan of his first 6 months at Polisia. Someone who really needs a new stage and a new start after everything that went down at Polisia with
And a
him.
new
And
passport.
yeah, I think he's got that back, evidently. They missed a trick on the announcement video of someone not actually giving it to him or handing it to him. That would have been hilarious. But anyway,
By the way, Andrew,
and
I just double checked your insight. Another goalkeeper of Chernomorets backed Shevchenko, so it's not
well,
that.
there you go.
Yeah, one-sided.
And they also signed a player from Sunderland, not Nazari Rusin, Jewison Bennett or Jefferson Bennett. I don't know how you properly pronounce it, but he has arrived, Costa Rica winger, only 18 years old. He played in all three of Costa Rica's group stage games at the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. Has not really hit the ground running at Sunderland and didn't really do much there, but I guess he's still quite young and he arrives for 500k fee. Let's see what either of those two can do, because at the moment, despite the fact they have like Momo, they have Molo, Ellington's best winger under Hrychorchuk so far seems to be Pasic. And I mean, that's pretty low level for the kind of players that they have brought in. Yashari is still by far their best player. I mean, scored a great goal against Dinamo, and I think it was key that they kept him until at least the summer, because I think they probably will be able to get that 1+ million that they want for him. But you know, time will tell once again with LNZ. And I mean, alongside that, a team that wants to obviously rise, Kribas seemed to have slightly fallen off at the start of this campaign.
Massively. It's very, very worrying times for them. Some terrible results, obviously lost to Inhalets. But yeah, hearing stuff about things happening at the top and things like that happening for over like the last 4 months, and maybe that was being masked, you know, on the pitch, you know, and it's finally filtering through. You know, they've had a fair few changes to the squad as well, but you know, that sort of stuff does not help. But they did get it right against Shakhtar to get a draw, but the form has been absolutely abysmal. You know, it's not even something that they can bounce back from. And if it's stuff that's going on upstairs, then it is very worrying times.
They
Yeah.
have actually brought in five players on deadline day. I think three relatively young Nigerian players, one Croatian who's not played for a good 6 months, a year, and someone from Latin America who can't remember at the top of my head. But they haven't actually, they haven't actually played or anything like that. So we'll see if they're going to bring anything, because Kribas's scouting network has actually been quite good for talent ID over the past couple of years. So let's see if we'll give them a chance. And that Mendoza that they brought in, the Venezuelan guy, he's actually looked quite good. Scored a great goal against Shakhtar. However, I feel that probably one of the big mistakes of Werner Dubs in this first sort of number of matches was not playing Klitschko, the goalkeeper, for at least the first two that they ended up losing to Inhalets and to Veres. And then he came in against Shakhtar, was man the match, and it's like, well, something seems to be adding up here. And I think Werner Dubs' contract expires at the end of this year, at the end of this season. So let's see if he's going to be staying. Is he going to be renewing? What's going to happen there?
I think there are quite interesting times going on in England as well at the moment. We've had a lot of their news broadcast by their number one fan up in northern England. You've had a very, very close eye on them for us, haven't you, sir?
I've always banged on about them and how they perform. You know, they play with great intensity, but since the restart, it's been a complete revelation, and they've been an absolute joy to watch. But I think it's about, I don't know how to put this into words. It's almost like knowing your place. Do you know, like Inhalets have realised, you know, like pretty much we aren't going to go out and win games. We aren't going to go out and dominate games, but what we can do is be a very, very difficult team to break down. What we are going to play is we're going to stick five midfielders, we're going to play deep, we're going to hit you on the counter, and we're going to just keep doing that for the whole game. Do you know what I mean? And it's almost like it's finally sort of working a little bit. You know, I know a loss to Rukleviv and beating Kribbas, it's not exactly working in inverted commas, but it's positive. You know, it's almost like if you had sort of like one superstar in there, sort of like one real goal scorer and maybe a couple of players with real experience, you'd see a complete different team. You know, I'd almost see a mid-table or signing a bit like Karatin at Veres. Do you know someone like that just to come in? But yeah, I think it's not looking great, put it that way. But hopefully, one season got down, one season back, and we'll see what happens. But no, very, very positive. I like it. Difficult, compact, intense, and players who are playing for the shirt, despite being bottom of the league. I like to see it.
Livy Barret, they seem to be incredibly hard to beat as well at the moment. So
They've actually got the, let's say, the formula of Kolos that they have worked with over the past few seasons and been successful with. They seem to be doing it correctly, if in a way. Perovac there, he has, got them very solid defensively. They concede very little goals, but score very little. But with the arrival of Dmytro Šestal this window, he's been unbelievable for them. Scored the winner against Črnomorets, scored from almost the halfway line against Veres, and they've got their next game coming up at the weekend. And they're a good couple of points, I think 4 points above the relegation zone now. I mean, I think they just need to knuckle down, keep doing what they're doing, because that's essentially their main goal for this season, is to stay up. And fair play to them. Big shout out to Marchenko in goal for Obolon in the first few games, right, Ray? He was really good. 18-year-old, not played for any youth national teams or anything like that yet. And he was probably man the match in both of those games.
The streets will never forget. Unpopular opinion, but Livy Barret might be pulling off the formula of the original Obolon from 15 years ago. They have the stadium, they have the academy, they have the reputation of a, up-and-coming club, and they even have the green kit, which is an identical copy from the one by Puma in 2010-11 season, which Obolon had. So check it out. It's made by Nike. And it's a decent one, but I mean, when I saw it, I was just like, are you kidding me?
Looking at the table at this stage, obviously Ingoletts, as Michael mentioned, they're plugging away, putting up a good fight, but it's going to be a long road. But there seems to be a gap appearing at the bottom amongst the bottom sort of four, five, six teams with Orsla, Obolon, Chornomorets, and Kolos around 18 points as well. And then LNZ and Livy Barret at 22 each. Then it's up to things we've got. The question has to be asked. A few years ago, we were quite excited when the league was expanded to 16 teams, just ahead of the full-scale invasion and the economic impact it's had not only on the UPL but on Ukraine in general. At this stage, we have to ask the question, gentlemen, do we still need the 16-team league? And would Ukrainian football be better served by having a more elite 10-12-team league, similar to the ones that we saw back in 2017, 2018, that sort of stage? Although at that stage, it also had a lot of criticism because Dinamo seemed to be playing Shakhtar every second week in spring, and we had a way too many Klasichnys at that stage. But I'd love to know your thoughts on it. Well, are you happy with the present setup, or do you foresee a change that's required to help Ukrainian football develop the clubs even more to try and have some sort of success that can't be reached through financial output?
Well, I think one thing that's interesting is that a few clubs, I think led by Ivan Ndaye and the president of Veres, over the winter break, he had an interview with a friend of the pod, Irina Kozyupa, and he wants to bring in a kind of league cup into Ukrainian football in order to create more games. Because he's saying that it's very difficult for Ukrainian clubs, such as his own and others, to develop effectively if you're only playing 30 games a year. You've got a 2 month, 3 month winter break. You're playing one game a week. If you get knocked out of the cup in the early rounds, then you've got no hope, and the cup only resumes in April. So an extra couple of matches is all you're going to have. So I understand the arguments for making the league smaller from a quality of teams perspective, because Ingoletts, as hard as they fight, it's like, is there any point in watching games where they are just defending 10 man behind the ball and trying to hold off hordes and waves of, better teams against them. I don't know, but if you were to reduce it, then it's going to make even less matches, or it's going to make more matches of the same thing that we're just seeing, over and over again. I don't know what format would work personally, because the format where the league split, remember that? And it was like fighting for relegation, fighting for that. And then it's like it ends up being where the team that finishes like eighth and ninth are actually playing for absolutely nothing. That for that crappy trophy that they invented for like a couple of for a couple of seasons.
That
And
can
then
be
it's
improved. That can be improved with a couple of playoffs for the Europa
yeah,
positions. It
but
had.
it can't now, Ray, because there are only three, four European spots. When there was
How
six,
about?
for example, I think that was fair enough. Like even now winning the UPL for Dinamo or Shakhtar is really, it doesn't mean anything. Yes, it means something for the fans and like, oh yeah, we're going to have bragging rights. But in the grand scheme of things, actually winning the league has lost its impetus in general because you don't qualify for the Champions League proper anymore. You don't even qualify for the playoffs. You qualify for the second qualifying round. From next season, you're going to qualify for the first. And it's like, okay, the one thing that actually it will improve, ironically, is we're never going to see the likes of Zorya versus Desna trying to not win silver medal because they
That
don't
was terrible.
want to. We're never going to see that again, at least, or at least for the foreseeable, because there's no need to not want to win the league. You know what I mean? Or finishing second. Now, at least every team will want to fight. Like Alexandria are going to be fighting for, yes, we can do this. We can try and win this. So weirdly, it's like a juxtaposition of different things are happening. Some things are actually positive, some things are actually awful. But we just don't know what the long-term impact of some of these things are going to be. You know what
I
I
think
mean? I mean,
BFL is going to give an answer. This is going to be a revolution from the
right.
bottom.
But that's the question. What's going to happen to the PFL? Is it the fact that we're going to need some of these teams that they keep on accepting every year to just hold off and say, no, you're not turning pro? Because this is just like a merry-go-round of teams coming in and then walking out. You know, like that Abe Simpson meme where he just walks into the thing and
But
walks out. That's essentially
I
what we're
mean,
getting from time to time.
Lokomotiv is doing okay as a pro team.
Yeah, of
Lokomotiv.
course they are. But I'm saying, like, what's the point of having Druholica where there's just loads of Alexandria 2, Rook 2? And I understand that there aren't enough places or clubs or pro clubs for Ukrainian clubs to actually send most of their giant, massive squads to, or players that they have on their books. So they have to create these reserve teams, or they have to find a farm team to send players to. And it's like, well, what's the point in any of this? Like, and then, but then there's going to be a surplus of professional footballers. And then you think about it, it's actually, are some of these players good enough to be pros? Maybe we should just, or you expand the professional leagues, and the amateur championships have been more or less pro for a lot of the teams that are in it. Have been pro for years, and some of them pay better than some Druholica teams. Maybe you extend the
Exactly.
pyramid. Maybe you extend the pyramid. To create a, like relegation, promotion, and all that kind of thing,
But Andrew,
and that will expand it.
you realize
I don't
that
know.
talking about expand and expansion, you're talking about this big thanks to the series on YouTube about a certain amateur team. I think that's the biggest reason, inspired by another series which was made on absolute and complete initiative of one person, right? So I'm talking about Veres here. And then Veres inspired this series about the amateur club whose coach was invited to be an expert on UPL TV. And this is another juxtaposition, which is great, just a juxtaposition to be in. But we have this is a backfire of being a best of the rest and having two top clubs because all the media are centered on these two clubs and the people who used to play in them, one way or another. That's all you will hear about. So if you talk about expand, you need to expand the coverage. You need to ask media, okay, wait, look, Kharkiv, you have like five teams, let's say. In Cherkasy, in the oblast, you have hundreds of teams which can be looked at. I mean, not hundreds, of course, but let's say 10 teams, right? Instead of one LNZ Cherkasy. This is real. And people are, climbing up, but once again, they're using their own initiative, their own effort. if the people just turn their heads around, there will be so much to discover. Ukraine is the biggest country in Europe. I mean, what are we talking about, right? So if we just, manage to widen the scope a little bit, this would be magnificent. And talking about the format, why don't we consider apertura and clausura, where in the half,
I was going to say that.
in the
I was
half,
going
for
to say that,
example,
young
but I have a wild idea. I have a wild card with the Persia teams joining the top league for clausura and trying to hold on, having a chance to win the championship or
Very
qualify for
quickly,
Europa
for
League.
people
You've
that don't.
have spent too long in Argentina, my friend, with those 30, 40 team Primeira Leaguers.
Yeah, I will. If anyone wants to actually know a bit more about that, I'll add a link to a explain of how that crazy system works down in South America, because it's going to take about 2 hours to explain on this
It's
podcast. But that would just, I think that would sort of cause like aneurysms and strokes if that came to Ukrainian football, because no one would be able to understand it, and it would just be way too intense.
as Ray mentioned something there that really resonates with me is the fact that Ukraine is the biggest country in Europe, yet it doesn't regionalize its football. I'm in one of the smallest countries in Europe, and we regionalize our football because we don't want people having to travel over 100 kilometers for a game when they're earning a pittance. You can't be sending Minai over to Kyiv every second, third week for a match because the money isn't there. The money isn't there. You've got these 30, like, I mean, I agree with you about the fluidity of the leagues and perhaps expanding it. I think that's one of the things. But regionalize them below the UPL. You have smaller groups, and then you can have an elite tournament with the winners of each group qualifying to a knockout at the end for promotion, relegation, however they want to work that. That's quite a simple thing. But we know that money's at a premium, and we know that finding sponsors is at a premium. You reported yourself a couple of weeks back about FC Mariupol already on the process of folding, and since last summer, am I right? They've not been able to replace the crypto sponsor that they'd had previously. Well, we can't expect them to be going all over the country. It costs money. So by reducing that travel, reducing those expenses, the club that I've been working for in Luxembourg has a real simple rule. The player has to live within 40 kilometers of the club. You can't expect people for low wages. And we know that in the Druha, like you said, some of these are not getting much. You can't expect them to be traveling over. You can't expect owners to be building dormitories for players to live in and the like. It needs to be scaled down, but still in a way that provides fluidity for clubs that have got that desire to go up. And by creating a structure that works well, but is still financially viable, would work for me. I mean, yeah, the UPL needs to decide what it really wants. As Ray quite rightly says, the media coverage is very Big Two centric, and it's not healthy at all. Obviously, UPL TV is helping by making sure every game is open and discussed, but it still really needs to improve on that. I'm a fan of the small league myself. It works in Scotland to a certain extent. Rangers and Celtic are still very competitive in Europe. Their coefficient, I think, is rather strong as well. But it's a small country. They do
And
have the
obviously,
league,
there's no war. So
and they do
Celtic
have a league
can.
club, and they do have a league cup
Yeah.
as well.
So, all of that, I completely agree with you, Adam. Like, it helps, to try and model ourselves on maybe a Scotland or something would be interesting. But also in Scotland, the support that each club has, even in the lowest of leagues, is absolutely mental. And the culture is completely different, which also means that some of these clubs, even if they were at risk of going bust, fan supporters clubs and all that kind of thing would step in to help. And obviously, right now, certain costs are being prioritized for the war, as quite rightly. So you can't be sort of creating new clubs and all that kind of thing. And even like we're talking about expanding something are probably unlikely. But I agree with you. Regionalizing leagues, not in the way that the Persian Druha do it or have done it over the past few years, where it's like half of the country and half else, because then like at least couple teams are traveling a good 6 hours minimum per match day and all that kind of thing. And I,
Metalist counts as a Western team because they play in Uzhhorod, so.
well, exactly. So it's that kind of thing. And if you were to maybe just merge them with the amateur championships, then that would help regionalize everything. The clubs have got backing down there as well. It will obviously assist. It's just all this. I think there's a lot of problems with the licensing of how UAF does those kinds of things and gives them professional status and all that kind of thing. But I mean, if you sort of maybe even modelled it on like the National League, where there are pro teams and there are non-pro teams, that might be something to work with. And I mean, the main problem for me is, like, obviously the UPL, there's not enough games. And then you look at the Persijan Druga Liga. They come back in April from their winter break, having ended towards the end of November. That's like a whole year break, play 6 to 8 games. Okay, and then have like a month and a half break in the summer and come back. I understand that the winter break is the summer break, for example, for most, as it's meant to be for the rest of Europe and all that kind of thing. But most of these teams, like in the Persijan Druga, they're playing friendlies every single week, either outside or indoors or wherever they can find it. Why can't they just play competitive matches? It just doesn't make any sense. Just like, come on, just have some kind of logic here. Like, oh wow, what, they can't play competitive football when it's like zero outside? Of course they can. They're playing friendlies every week. It just it's a, our friend Phil Howden goes to about five or six of them every single weekend. What's making it so hard to actually make those matches competitive? They've all got normal refs, ones that officiate different places and all that kind of thing. Just I think that there just needs to be proper look into things, and at the moment it's not happening. So let's see if any of this comes about. But
Proper leadership. Proper leadership. Now, Mr. Brajko, is he following in Shaparenko's footsteps? Is he going to be Dinamo's next great failure?
Shaparenko is not a failure yet. I mean, he still hasn't reached his prime, just like Boyarski.
well,
Boyarski
if he hears this, he'll be as grumpy as normal anyway.
is. I would say that Brajko is in risk of following another Dinamo midfielder footsteps, who is Ruslan Bidnenko. And long story short, Ruslan Bidnenko ended up being considered as a transfer to a French club. I believe it was RC Lens at some point, or maybe Romanian club. I'm not really sure. There's a big scope to cover, but he was considered to be transferred for a bus, for a double-decker team bus, instead of money. He used to play for Chorno Moritz, and his team considered to buy him and pay off with a bus. Why am I telling you this? Because he used to be a Dinamo player, and Dinamo bought him from Borisfen. And what Borisfen owner did back in the day, he used certain journalists to shoot the video of a player. And he would announce it on on TV, and the report said, "You know what? This guy, he's about to move to Stuttgart. The Stuttgart scouts are on the stands." Then, in one day, you have Shakhtar going after him, and then after, in the next day, the president told about this guy to certain Dynamo person. Sourcuis would come in, and Sourcuis would buy the player just because Shakhtar wants him. In reality, nobody wanted the guy. But the media aspect is crucial here. What do we have now? We have the same Borisfen situation, but now Dinamo is Borisfen, and Dinamo from 2004 is Wolverhampton. And my point is, Wolverhampton wanted Brashko. Šurkis didn't want to because he thought, wait a second. Premier League side wants my player. I'm not gonna accept 20 millions. I'm gonna raise the bar here, and the media will do the rest. Because let's be honest, the media is what this story of Brashko is about. He goes to football shows. He gives interviews. He's the most media covered, if you could say that. He has the most publicity, and I would say it's the one of the best publicity you can have in Ukrainian football. He has his Instagram. He, as Andrew Todos reported to us back in the day, he deleted all his pictures, like a classic influencer, let's say, right? Who wants to attract as more attention, as much attention as he can. This is something surreal, to be honest, because this is not the football we remember. Like we talk about Rangers and Celtic, but look at Sudakov, right? Look at Mudryk. I mean, 4-4-3-3, or what was this public called? I mean, they played a huge part, right? All of that media bubble played a huge part, and we have Mudryk playing, well, not playing, but going to Chelsea for a certain amount of money. We have Sudakov being considered as a wannabe so far. Let's be honest, he's still a wannabe. And we had Brashko.
It's a bit of a strange one why they dropped him to the bench, especially when you wanted to get him in the shop window and get his price tag moved up. But he was definitely missed on that front for Dynamo Kyiv. But I think they need him. I don't get why. I think he might struggle with a bit of form. There's a bit of hysteria around him. There's all this, but ultimately it'll come good. And I know we're going to touch on this later, but I think it's a disgrace that he's not in. Going for the national team as well. But yeah, I think they definitely need him. He definitely needs to start get playing, and for everyone, especially him, because he needs to get out of that club.
I think he's not the only one.
Vivchenko also signed a contract extension. I think his contract was ending this summer. And Surkis came out afterwards saying, we can't let a player of our own academy that we've raised and all that kind of thing go for free, a la Andriy Ermolenko back in the day and all that kind of stuff. So they expect him to bring some kind of fee. He's actually been playing quite well since the start of this year in particular. So good for him. Nazar Voloshin, who remember we were talking about, he had offers from I think Sunderland and Lons and all that kind of thing, and he signed a new deal. And it's like, okay. And Brashko has also signed a new deal. I mean, like a year extension onto his current deal to make out, you know, the discrepancies in what he might have been earning at Wolves, you know, to try and sweeten the deal that they didn't let him go. And what Ray was saying there was, you know, completely accurate, that it's kind of like this comparison to what we saw 20 years ago. But then, fair enough, Sorokin didn't want to let him go. He wanted more money and all that kind of thing. But then to come out in the media and start saying, actually, Wolves is quite shit of a Premier League team to move to. He'll be better off staying here. He's not won anything yet in his career. He needs to win the Ukrainian Premier League, and then he can show that he was, you know, deserving of something. We've already mentioned what winning the Ukrainian Premier League is worth these days. Not much. And with the way that Dynamo are actually playing right now, it doesn't look like they want to win it. Pretty poor against Zorya, 2-2. The level of this season, it's like, bloody hell. Can someone just at least do a Liverpool and just break away and show us that you are the best? Whereas we thought Dynamo would probably do that after they beat Alexandria twice. But now they're struggling. They've just about luckily beat LNZ thanks to a Brashko inspired own goal. Of freak proportions kind of thing in the last minute. And everyone's like, okay, that's what champions are made of. They struggle, but they get the win. But then they got a good point against Zorya, who have been playing really well under Mladen Bartulovic, who've brought in a number of Balkan players, one from Bosnia, I think a Serb, someone from Slovenia. Mitzin scored twice amazing goals in the last match day. This Papara guy that they've brought in looking really good as well. So it's like fair play from that perspective. And I mean, I think actually what's making it all tick is Bartulovic, to be honest. He's been a great coach whenever he has been caretaker there, and now is obviously the proper manager, and when he was at Inhulets for those periods as well. So I think he's got a bright future ahead of him, and it looks like, as much as Ray is going to hate it because he doesn't like Zoria as a club. They could be, I would say they could break into that top six this season if they keep on going, just based on current form, crises at other clubs and all that kind of thing. It just looks like there's a bit of stability there. Europe is way too early, and I don't think that they do particularly well in Europe if they made it there or any qualifying round. So maybe let's reserve ourselves. But a good comeback after how poor last season was. And that was really underwhelming, where they were like, bottom, near the bottom for most of the season, terrible in the Europa League and all that kind of thing, a Conference League. So listen, I think from a Dynamo perspective, they just need to not lose any of their remaining matches. They've got quite a difficult run in. They've got Shakhtar to play in Lviv. Not that it matters where it is, but it's still going to be a big game, especially in the fact that I don't think Dynamo have beaten Shakhtar in any of the recent number of seasons. And it's the kind of match that Shakhtar decide to turn up in when they've been playing relatively poor of late. Dynamo still have Polisa to play. We've mentioned Polisa poor against poor teams, but somehow inspired against the better sides. So maybe something's going to come from there. They've still got Krivbas to play. You never know what kind of banana skin that's going to be. Let's see how it goes. But I mean, improvements have to be made. And I mean, maybe Shovkovsky is not the man that is going to be leading, or should be leading Dynamo long term. I think we spoke about that earlier this season, and it's probably coming true.
I would always go for Shokoski as being a brilliant puppeteer. He has to be in the dressing room. I think he's got the dressing room. He just doesn't have the actual maybe.
Tactical nous to, get the wins, get the motivation. Yes, Dynamo's defense is terrible, and they haven't bothered to reinforce it this window. Another problem. They tried to sign this Bolivian attacking midfielder who's actually quite a big star for their national team from Santos. He was about to fly out, and then Santos decided to start messing around with financial stuff in the last minute. Dynamo said, get lost. And he's not there. And I mean, I don't think he was going to make or break their season anyway. And I don't know where he would have really fit in with the likes of, Bujalski. You've got Pichalionok, who seems to be always injured as well, all the time. Hence why actually Bujalski has been called up to the national team, probably because I think Pichalionok was probably the better option there. But regardless.
Whilst we're on the topic of injuries, Dynamo have actually signed an injury-prone player who's already injured himself, and for the time being, it's unclear how long he's going to be out for. Valeri Luchkevich, who once was a very promising winger, he was essentially brought in as a free agent. Kolos let him go for the remainder of this season because Timchik's out for at least a month and a half, so to the end of this campaign. And he was brought in as backup for that. Evidently, Karavayev is not really looked at as coherent backup defensively. Karavayev apparently is not going to even have his contract renewed at the end of this summer, according to Viktor Ovatskor. So Luchkevich comes in and immediately gets injured in his first training session. I mean, that's kind of a marker of where things are at from the scouting network, etc. On paper, it seems logical, but when you look at his injury record over the past few years, where he's played hardly any football at all, over the past 6 to 9 months, slightly concerning.
And then you see some of the players they've let go. Andrievski playing relatively well at Polisia. Shepelev, we're about to come on to in a bit. There's a management problem at Dynamo from higher up, and it's sort of something needs to change there. And until it is changed, I don't see anything really
Toxicity,
changing.
right? They call it. But let's not forget that Dynamo can grab this third star if they actually end up winning the
Exactly.
league.
And it's going to be a third star on the kit. So, one that Mike will certainly want to get his hands on next
I'm
season.
listening to all the comments about Martolovic, and do you think he is ready or has the ability to, one, perhaps take what could become a soon-to-be vacant Polisia job, or two, go even higher and could be suited to a Dynamo or a Shakhtar, perhaps a little further down the line. He certainly, one, will have the dressing room. He's a, one of those fantastic man managers. Having met him personally and seen the way he had the team at Ingolets on side. And two, he seems a lot more tactically astute. He understands the game. So do you see him as one to keep an eye on when these jobs do become available? Or quite dreaming?
Actually, do you know where he would probably slot in quite well based on their recent strategy of managers? Shakhtar, you know, Croatian. Dario Cerna brings him in. Continuation. But apparently Pušić has got the full backing of Akhmetov, according to Viktor Vatskov. So I don't know what's happening. There's also some news from Turkey today, a Turkish guy, journalist. So take it with a pinch of salt. I don't know how reliable it is. He said that Shakhtar came in for Arda Turan to be their new technical director, but it was rejected. He's currently the manager of Eyüpspor, where Taras Stepanenko plays. Not sure what, that's probably just completely random, just invented that because it's a slow news day or something, potentially. Because if that was the case, then it would mean that Cerna is going somewhere in the summer, or they're at least planning on moving away from him. And I feel that that just seems too unlikely and too drastic. But, you know, speaking of that, Shakhtar, two-horse race in the UPL. But no, they are no longer involved in it. As Marino Pušić said post-match against Karpaty, a 0-0 draw. Mike, what was your takeaway from their start to this season? From the start of this year, they've brought in a £17 million striker who's not scored yet, featured at least some part in every game. They've brought in another winger, Alisson, from Atletico Mineiro, literally at the start of this week. He's already debuted against Karpaty. Looks all right. He's replacing Zubkov. We're seeing, I guess, the one positive for Shakhtar has been the renaissance of Nazarena. He's come in playing well, slotted into that place vacated by Taras Stepanenko. Kryskiv's had the kind of bit part role from what he was doing in the first half of the season. What's going wrong with Shakhtar? And Pušić has, by the way, after the 0-0, I think Shakhtar are now 10 points away from Dinamo. He's actually conceded the title. He says that we can't catch them.
Yeah,
but he's actually conceded to Dinamo, by the way. Not mentioning Alexandria, who I think has been overwatched. But yeah.
Yeah, who we will come to. And I said this on the last episode, Shakhtar were already chasing from a position of lack. That's how I felt, you know, even if they had added these players. And then they got rid of all their experience. And these are players that, like, you know, like Stepanenko, like, I know he had, like, on a personal level, he might have wanted to go, but this guy's won everything. Like, if you're in a title race, these players are crucial to have around, you know. Matvienko being the oldest player now at 28 is crazy. I think Sudakov's been a bright spark since the restart, you know. As I said, he's now having his best season ever, and he actually played really well. And I liked what he did. He came on and made a difference against Alexandria. That was a game that I felt... No, it's easy when he was cruising through, getting a few 6s or 7s out of 10s, but that was a game. They needed him to step up. They needed a match winner. They needed a game changer, and he came on and scored. So that was positives. Yeah, these signings that they're making, you know, I've seen people on social media being really pleased with an injection of cash, with the finally gone out and spent the money. I don't know what these players are like. I know that... is it Elias who's been playing? He's looked very rusty when he's been on the ball, but that's expected. You've been chucked into Shakhtar when they're low on confidence, underachieving, chasing the title. Do you know what I mean? Every game's got pressure, and you've forced in, and you've come off a big price tag. And I think teams, you know, they've gone out and spent this money. You know, like, the price tag doesn't equal the player being good. Does that make sense? You know, so people are looking at, we've signed this £17 million player, and I'm thinking, yeah, but clubs will know you're
desperate.
They're
not ready yet. They're super young. They're both like 18, 19.
Yes.
And they probably in Brazil haven't been playing against 10 men behind the ball kind of football and that kind of thing. So they have to adapt to that. They have to, you know, they're not ready-made players to try and change something or turn something around. It's very much a long-term 2-3 year project for those kinds of types.
Clubs will know you're desperate. You've just sold Zubkov. They know you've got, you know, they've, you know, you've got a bit of money laying about.
Yeah,
you know, they know there's going to be less opportunities.
Like these two signings are now in the top five Shakhtar signings of all time, by the way. And obviously,
how much pressure does that come with there straight away? Everyone's saying this, you know, and this is your 18 flying over from Brazil, you know.
But it also shows maybe their strategy has become rushed and not like. It's not really understandable what they're going for. Obviously, the first 2 years of the war, they focused on Ukrainian talent. And then once it became more obvious that you could attract Brazilians of some kind, they've gone back to that. But it doesn't seem like there is some kind of coherent direction that they want to move.
And who is their sporting director, Andrew? Who is their sporting director again? And by the way, anybody heard of Tsukhanov? The new Tsikhanov? By according to Marca newspaper, no.
Yeah, well, he's fallen out of the wayside too. So it's like Shakhtar probably they can still win the cup. They can qualify for the Europa League. Maybe battle Alexandria for second, if Alexandria finished second, that is. But speaking of Alexandria, I actually think they probably are the team most deserving of winning the UPL based purely off the level of football they play, the most attractive in the league, and they've probably been the most consistent team. Yes, they've had a few lucky wins that some people attribute to dodgy refereeing decisions, but on the whole, they play very good football. Like against Obolon, they completely battered them 4-0. But I think one thing that people have been highlighting is that even when they're 3-0 up in the 90th minute, they're closing down and pressurising Obolon, who are trying to pass it around the edge of their own box. And as a result of that, they're scoring goals from it. So they got the fourth, you know, when other Ukrainian teams would just sit back, start bringing defenders on and not doing anything. And they're just going for it. And I mean, it's great to see Filipov, a favourite of this podcast, have his time in the sun again. He's been consistent
of
wherever
one
he's
of
gone.
The members of the podcast of one of the members.
Yeah, well, he's been consistent everywhere he's gone in Ukraine. Dnipro 1, he was playing really well there, obviously come to Alexandria, and he has given them that thing that they were lacking over the past couple of seasons under Rotain, that consistent goal scorer. And I mean, everyone else is chipping in as well. Endika, who's been a really good new signing, scored a banger. You like him, don't you, Mike? And also Tsara.
I think the signings have been really smart, but that's like we've been saying, like Ruslan Rotten's just he's just Mr. Reliable, isn't he? He just seems to know the league very well, know who needs to step in, and the signings have just stepped in so well.
He's a perfect example of time. He needed a bit of time when he first arrived there, but yeah, he has instilled what he wants his teams to do. And I feel that he's got the squad now, and like Shepelev. We were just talking about some of the players that Dynamo have let go. Shepelev's probably the prime example of how good a player that was seen surplus. He didn't play like hardly at all over the past couple of years at Dynamo Kyiv. And how he's probably over the past four games, he's probably been one of Alexandria's best players, one of the best players in the league. Like he was really, really effective against Obolon. He played relatively well on his debut. He got a goal in his second game. And he's like, okay, he's offering a goal threat. And he was like the ultimate defensive midfielder back in the day for you know, Dynamo, you know. And people, and Rotanya saying that he's going to get a Ukraine call up sometime soon, maybe for those friendlies in the summer. Who knows if Rebrov is going to be going experimental, then possibly. The question is, everyone, one word answer here quickly. Can they somehow take gold?
No.
No.
Hey, see, some positivity.
Yes, I believe
just,
now.
Just,
that's
some
what I
kind of just some kind of fairy tale towards the end of this very dreary UPL season of just not much happening. and obviously the depression of the European spots and everything from next season. So it's like, actually, who cares if our teams qualify for whatever and all that? Give it someone.
No,
mate.
Andrew, I have to interrupt you here. I mean, have you been to Dynamo dressing room recently? What happened to you? Like, have you spoken to Dynamo staff or something? Like, this attitude, man, come on. Like, the league, the mid-table, all teams have personalities. All of the teams are justifiable. They're unique. They don't fight for something, but they have their own image. You know, we definitely
exactly.
know who...
But that's why I want Alexandria to win. I want a new winner on
That was
on the
point.
Cup.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
I want to see something fresh, you know, especially because, yeah, third star would be great on a Dynamo kit if you're a Dynamo fan, and Shakhtar are out of the race now. So at least make it interesting, especially after Dynamo beating Alexandria twice. We thought that that was it for them, but somehow it's all coming back. Let's see.
I still stick with my no, Dave. I'm sorry, Andrew. Funnily enough, you were talking about Andrevsky earlier and Shepelev as well, and the fact that Dynamo don't win their Klasichnys. Now, the last time they did, both Shepelev and Andrevsky played together in the midfield. So Shepelev got a chance to stop the return. And that was when they beat them 1-0 the last time they won the league. And the only reason I remember that game was, of course, it was commented by yours truly. So, Dynamo, if you want to make sure it happens again, give me a call. We're almost there, everyone. Almost there. You're on the final straight now. We have to decide, what are we looking for? Our preparation for the World Cup qualifiers coming up later this year, or are we looking for promotion to League A? It's definitely a sort of a flip of the coin, shall we say. Michael, which way are you looking? What are you hoping to see from these games?
I'm hoping we're going to go for it and we're going to get promotion. But sensible, I know Rebrov's not, he doesn't like to change the squad too much and bring new players in and experiment. But it'd be nice to see the start of sort of the experimentation phase against Belgium. Not too much. And then they've got two friendlies come June where I think you really need to see how we're going and we need to go forward in a different angle. But yeah, I think Nazarina coming in, I think I want to see him playing at centre defensive mid. I want to see him have a go. It's just a shame, like Pete Kalyanok, you know, players like this, you know, just got injured and didn't quite hit the form at the right times. But yeah, it's the centre defensive mid is the one where it's a little bit all up in the air. And I want to see who he picks for these next two games who I want to see go forward. Should Brachko not return? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to caveat. So what we're obviously, this has been released midweek, a week before Ukraine play against Belgium in Murcia in Spain. And what's happened is that these half matches of this UPL match day have taken place early so that Serhii Rebrov can collate and bring everyone that plays domestically in Ukraine to Spain. I think they're going to be based in Benidorm and have a training camp of sorts there before all the foreign-based players arrive at the start of next week. And the question is first of all, are these camps worth it? Is there a way of measuring whether they are of any, you know, actually give any effect to anything by having these camps? Because I think someone ended up working out that the last national team starting 11 against Albania was like 8 foreign-based players starting. So if you've got that, then it shows that only 3 players come from Ukraine, and then you've got some of the other players that are on the bench and all that kind of thing just coming to this training camp. Like, what's the purpose of the training camp having it early? I understand he gets a bit more time, gets the feel of who maybe he can bring in there. Like we're talking about this defensive mid position. A number of under 21 players who have also finished their match day early are also travelling. So Brachko is actually part of the travelling crew. He's going with with the cohort. Neshtcharet, Yermakov, who plays in goal for Alexandria, they're sort of going to be substituting Trubin and Lunin before they turn up. A number of other, the under 21 players are going to be involved too. However, no Batahov in this squad, who seems to have been, playing relatively well, and everyone seemed deserving of a spot at a very least, first call up. After starting for Trabzonspor, he's not been called up yet. Evidently, he's probably being counted on more by Unai Melgosa, because I think he's had combined almost over 50 caps for all the Ukrainian youth teams. He's the captain for the under 21 side. They've got friendlies, of course, preparing for the Euros this summer. Krupski is also another one that's not been called up. There's been debate over why he hasn't been called up, but I think at the end of the day, the thing is with Rebrov, he's very conservative on the most part. He doesn't like bringing in players for big games, or like new players for big games. So he brought in Sitch back in November. So he's called him up again in place of the injured Timchik, who probably would have been in the squad alongside Konoplya. Despite the fact Konoplya's not been playing much, he did start against Karpaty. He's been coming off the bench for Shakhtar. So at least he's got some kind of match practice going into this window. You've also got the goalkeeper question. No more Buschan. He's on the reserve list because of his move to Saudi, of course. Lunin is back. He's pulled out of the last two windows for illnesses and injuries and all that kind of thing, and then been back magically the week after for Real. So there's a question of his reliability and whether Rebrov is actually confident in bringing him in, because evidently he doesn't play that often for Real Madrid either, despite actually starting the most recent game for them, where I think they won 2-1. There wasn't really much he could do about the goal. It was like bounced off the line, bounced off the crossbar, and all this kind of thing. It was goal line technology. But the question is who's Rebrov's first choice keeper? Probably is going to be Trubin, despite the fact he's had some problems of late in goal. He's had a few, conceded a fair few, been rotated by Bruno Lage at Benfica. Does Vižnik deserve a start in goal for these two matches, coming off the back of his very impressive Champions League campaign and probably being the most consistent goalkeeper for his club side?
A tough one, actually. I haven't been thinking about goalkeeper position, to be honest, because people are already starting to undermining the value of these playoff matches. So I think I kind of caught the bug for a moment, because like, that's Belgium, that's like Division A. What is this, like, friendly with high responsibility status? Also, I wanted to ask Rebrov, using this opportunity here, why didn't he consider MLS guys? I mean, Cheberko is playing for Columbus, being supported as well. Very nice scenes from Ohio. And of all people, Alexander Svatok. He is in the reserve squad, but if the guys actually play, whereas we spoke about Shakhtar has not been doing good. And the main guys to consider are probably also Matviyenko and Bondar. I don't think so, So defense is what I have, what has been in my mind recently.
Well, the whole question is, I think, is how Rebrov is going to set up. Is he going to copy what we saw at the Euros? Is he going to play five at the back? And if he is, then to be honest, I think it's logical that we're going to see Maxi in the middle instead of Svatok. And based on his recent form, he's been all right for Plymouth, had a great honeymoon period, and then they've had a bit of a, poor run afterwards. Regardless, I think he's got that physicality in there. As long as he can just ensure that he doesn't make any mistakes or rash decisions, then he actually might be quite good in there, just based on that form that he's had of late. And I probably think that five at the back is going to be most effective. But then when you consider that, the reason probably that Rebrov actually went for that is because both of our wingers were injured in the Euros. Sankov and Mudrik were out of that match. So is he going to do the same? Play Timchik a la Konoplya and Mykolenko just as wing backs, and then play a bit more narrowly in the middle? We've got Yarmolyukhin again. I really want to see him get some minutes, certainly over Shaporenko. of late. He certainly deserves more minutes than him, especially if we're going to go a bit more defensive, because Yarmolyuk's more of that central midfield player rather than, full out attack. He's good at tackling. He's got that energy to, run all over the pitch. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe he starts just even as insurance for whoever is going to be a defensive mid. And I feel that realistically, it's got to be Kalushny because he was the first choice. He's now logically the first choice. If he was second choice in the autumn when Brashko was either playing or not playing, started two games. The only question is has he got the pace and the engine to play against a Belgium team that's going to have a lot of young players? They've got that Bakayoko guy who plays for PSV, who's like unbelievable, to actually, play the kind of role that Stepanenko used to do, of just being that person who breaks everything down, disruptor. Can he do it for the full 90? And if he can't, then obviously you can bring Nazarene in. But then what we're seeing a lot of actually with Nazarene at Shakhtar is that he's actually been involved a bit too much in attacks. Like when they were playing against the Kribas, I think he had six or seven chances in that match. And it was like, what are you doing? Why are you getting involved here? Okay, maybe it was like desperation time, but he probably needs to be a bit more reserved in that respect. And I think before we sort of obviously move on to sort of the attacking options, it's worth mentioning that Andrei Ermolenko has got a recall. He's played for Dinamo, obviously, in all four matches of this year so far. Does he deserve it? Based on actually the other options that we have, I would say yes, but he cannot be starting. Like, I would bring
Ray
him on.
doesn't agree.
Ray, I know, thinks that it's sort of the time to wash hands and sort of just go with, with what's happened with Sidorchuk, with what's ha likely happened with Stepanenko as well.
Remember the each match that he actually saved. Who did they play? What is Galatasaray or someone?
Yes.
That's
He
right.
came
Why
on
not? Why
second
not?
half. Why not? Exactly. So that is, we've got that. Just don't start him. I think he's more effective off the bench. The real question is going to be, like we mentioned, if it's five at the back, then maybe we don't even need a left winger. With this problem that we don't have Mudrik, Nazarenko's been out of form. He's in the squad. Zinchenko, maybe he's not been playing particularly much for Arsenal, but he is so key for Ukraine, as we saw against Albania, that he can just, pull out these performances out of nothing, really. And actually, he's been playing in midfield most recently by Arteta, ironically. Finally, it's clicked. And then, the striker position, if we are going to play two up top, are we going to play Yaremchuk and Dovbyk again, who don't have the chemistry together?
We're not in the casino,
Or
as Fomenko used to say.
do we actually put Dovbyk or Yaremchuk up top on their own and do what we actually played against Germany in that 3-3 draw at the very start of Rebrov's tenure, when it was Tsihankov was like the support striker slash wide man, and get involved from there, because Nazarenko can play right wing if you need to. If we're going to be playing with wing backs, you don't even really need a winger. So that might be a way of slotting everyone in. And Tsihankov's actually been playing pretty well for Girona. I think to end this, what's your expectations for these two games? Is it a preparation for the World Cup qualifiers, an early one? Or should Ukraine actually go for this and aim for Ligue A? Because some people are saying, what's our place in Ligue A? There's no point for us to go there. But bear in mind, this is going to be in 2026 after that World Cup. And it's like, at the end of the day, it helps develop the players. The only reason we got relegated from Ligue A in the last time round was because of a bloody Canton doctor in Switzerland and COVID. So come on, I think that there should be a bit more positivity from at least certain people in the media. Just give it a go. Yes, I know we're coming from a very maybe delusional position, okay, of how bad last year was. But let's start maybe this year with a new slate and some positivity. You know what I mean? Mike, what's your take?
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I feel like getting promoted to the A League and building for the World Cup, I feel go hand in hand. I don't think it's one or the other. I think going for the A League and going for Ligue A is what we should be doing to build in form and building an identity, getting that character, getting that.
Preparation for Croatia or France that we're going to be playing as the pot one team in our group in the autumn.
Exactly. Go back to 2020 when we Was it 2019 when we had that year? You know, obviously it was just a prolong. You know, we didn't just beat Portugal overnight. You know, it was a continuation of great form. So, and then that would have taken us into Euro 2020. So it starts now.
These sentences reminded me of Shevchenko. How much time did he have? He, I believe, had around 3 years to produce that result, more or less. Same as Rotan, we mentioned today. That was one sentence. Sentence two, the matches with Belgium are going to be a ray of hope.
Ooh, a
Ray of
ray.
hope.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ray, for bringing that hope. Now, it's going to be a fantastic international window, as you can see, and we'll be discussing it in more depth later in the month. And we look forward to that. And we're very hopeful that Rebrov's going to start the 2025 calendar year off on a positive footing. But till next time, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have listening to these fountains of knowledge. And till then, take care, stay safe, and goodbye for now. Bye bye.